brothers, his brother's end. And even if she weren't all those things, she absolutely wouldn't be for him. Felicity Faircloth was a daughter to a marquis, the sister to an earl, and so far above his station, she should have a different climate. Her porcelain skin was too perfect, her hands too clean, and her world too grand. Her wide-eyed delight at his Covent Garden warehouse, and her smirking pride at cracking the lock to his criminal life, only proved the point. Lady Felicity would never know what it was to be common. That alone should have been enough. Except she smiled before he could stop this mad game, and the candlelight played tricks, because she went from fetching to fucking beautiful. And that was before, she said breathlessly. No kind of ordinary. I think that might be the nicest thing anyone's ever said to me. Christ. He had to get her out of there.
Well, now you've seen the hold.
No, I haven't.
This is all there is to see.
It's dark, she replied, reaching for the lantern. May I? He relinquished it reluctantly, a thread of unease coiling through him at the idea that he was no longer in control of the light. He took a deep breath when she turned away from him and moved deeper into the hold to discover the stacks of ice within. The ship's cargo had been moved carefully through a long, straight path cut by removing blocks of ice, revealing the center of the hold, which only hours ago was full of casks and crates and barrels and boxes, now on their way to myriad locations throughout Britain. Damned if Felicity Faircloth didn't head straight for that path, as if she were attending a tea party at the center of a labyrinth. She called back. I wonder what I shall find inside the ice. He followed her. No, he followed the light, not the girl. He didn't care what happened to the girl. Let her explore the hold all she liked. Let her get frostbite for how she lingered inside it.
More ice, he said as she found the center of the space, along with its cold, muddy ground.
I'm not so sure. The light disappeared as she turned the corner, and it went out of view, darkness crawling over him from the rear. He took a deep breath, keeping his gaze on the hazy shadow of her head and shoulders above the ice, until it too disappeared, dropping out of sight. She'd no doubt slipped in the wet slop of the hold, a danger of working with ice.
Be careful, he cautioned, picking up speed, turning into the empty center of the room, to discover her crouched low, holding the lantern in front of her with all the skill of a Thames tide picker, searching for treasure.
She looked up at him. There's nothing here. He exhaled.
No.
Nothing but footprints of what was here before, she said with a wry smile. She pointed. A heavy box there. Changed direction. And there a barrel of some kind. His brows rose.
Bow Street is missing your cunning investigative instincts.
The smile became a grin. Perhaps I'll stop there on my way home. What was it?
Ice.
She said. I'm guessing it was something alcoholic, and I shall tell you what else. He crossed his arms over his chest and replied dryly.
I wish you would.
She pointed a finger at him triumphantly. I'm guessing it was something that came into the country untaxed. She was so proud of herself that he almost told her it had been American bourbon. He almost did a lot of things. He almost pulled her to her feet and kissed the detective work from her lips. Almost. Instead, he rubbed his hands together and blew into them.
Excellent deductions, my lady. But it's bloody freezing in here, so shall we head back so you might perform a citizen's arrest for your accusations, for which you haven't a lick of proof?
You should have worn a coat. She waved him off and went back to the wall of ice blocks. What do you do with the ice now?
We ship it throughout London. Homes and butcher shops and sweet shops and restaurants. And you're wearing my coat.
That's very kind of you, she replied. Did you not have a waistcoat?
We turn a profit on the ice or we wouldn't deal in it, he said. I typically don't dress for manual labour.
I noticed, she said, and Devil snapped to attention at her low, soft words.
You noticed? It was virtually indecent, she said, her voice louder, defensive. I'm not certain how I was not to notice. He approached her, unable to stop himself, and she pressed back, away from him against the ice. Reaching out, she set a hand to the fabricated wall, instantly removing it when the cold registered.
Be careful, he said.
Are you worried I'll freeze? He told the truth.
I'm worried you'll melt it.
She raised a brow at him. You forget I've not yet learned to be a flame. For the life of him, he'd never know why he didn't stop at that. Why he didn't snatch up the lantern and take her away.
You and your desire to incinerate us all, Felicity Faircloth. You are terribly dangerous.
Not to you, she said softly as he drew nearer, the quiet words like a siren's call. You'll never get close enough to burn. He was already close enough.
You'd best keep your sights on another, then.
No, set them on me. We can burn together. He was close enough to touch her. Then you'll teach me. Anything, anything she asked for. You'll show me how to make men adore me. God, it was tempting. She was tempting.
If Ewan adores her, it will hurt him more when you take her away. If he's impassioned, you'll punish him more.
But that wasn't all of it. Now there was Felicity. And if she allowed herself to feel passionately about Ewan, she wouldn't only be ruined by the dissolution of their courtship, she would be devastated by it. She'd be a casualty of this war, decades in the making, that she'd had nothing to do with. She'd be wounded in the balance. That was never the plan.
Bullshit. That was always the plan.
The plan was to show Ewan that Devil would always be able to pull the strings, that Ewan lived by his bastard brother's benevolence and nothing else, that they could end any marriage he thought to begin, that they could end him. Teaching Felicity Faircloth about passion would be the easiest way for Devil to put his plan into action. He could woo the girl, even as she wooed the Duke, and then, just as they were to marry, seduce her away and send his clear message. No heirs, no marriage, no free will, never for you. That was the arrangement they'd made, was it not? The promise the brothers had sworn in the dark of night as their monstrous father had manipulated and punished, never once thinking of them as anything more than candidates to be the next in a long line of Marwicks. The three boys had vowed never to give their father what he asked. But Ewan had won the contest, and after he'd taken the title, the house, the fortune, the world their father had offered, he'd broken ranks and tried for even more. An heir to a dukedom that should never have been his to begin with. An illegitimate son, once willing to kill for legitimacy, now come for it on another path. One he had vowed he would never travel. And Devil would teach him a lesson, which meant Felicity would have to learn it too. He lifted the lantern from her hands and set it on the block next to her, the light flickering over the cloudy ice, setting it to a strange grey-green glow. He could see the pulse racing in her neck as he did it. He was so close to her. Or maybe he couldn't. Maybe he only wanted her pulse to race. Maybe it was his pulse he sensed. He met her gaze, eager and beautiful, and leaned toward her.
Are you sure you wish this door opened, Lady Lockpick? He said, hating himself for the words, knowing that if she agreed, she would be ruined. He would have no choice but to ruin her.
She didn't know that, though. Or if she did, she didn't care. Her eyes sparkled, candlelight flickering in their deep brown depths. Very sure. No man on earth could resist her. And so he did not try. He reached for her, his hand coming to her cheek, fingers grazing over the impossibly soft skin of her jaw, tracing the bones of it into her hairline, threading there, catching in the thick mahogany curls, trapped by her hairpins, bent into lockpicks, locking him to her. Her lips fell open at the touch, a soft, stunning intake of air revealing her excitement, her desire. revealing his. With his free hand, he touched the other side of her face, exploring it, reveling in the silk of her skin, in the way her cheeks rose and hollowed, in the little crease at the corner of her mouth, where a dimple flashed when she teased him. He leaned toward her, fully, madly intending to put his lips to that crease, to taste it. "Blind man's buff," she whispered. "Your hands, it's like the game." A child's game, a country house whim. One player blindfolded, trying to identify another by touch. As though Devil wouldn't know Felicity Faircloth by touch for the rest of time. "Close your eyes," he said. She shook her head. "That's not how the game is played."
"I'm not playing a game."
Her gaze found his. "Aren't you?" "Not in that moment."
"Close your eyes," he repeated.
She did, and he moved closer, leaning in, putting his lips at her ear.
"You tell me what you feel."
He could hear the way he impacted her, the breath that caught in her chest, shuddered through the long column of her throat as she exhaled, thin and reedy, as though it were difficult for her to get the air in. Devil understood the feeling, even more so when one of her hands rose to hover above his shoulder, teasing him without touching him. He spoke again, letting his breath fan the high arc of her cheek, where he wanted to kiss.
"Felicity, fairest of them all," he whispered. "What do you feel?"
"I," she started, and then, "I don't feel cold." No, he didn't imagine she did.
"What do you feel?" he asked again.
"I feel..." Her hand lit upon his shoulder, the weight of it like fire. He bit back a groan. Grown men did not groan at the brush of a hand against their shoulder. Not even if it was a flame, hot and impossible in the frigid room.
"What do you feel?"
"I think it must be..." "Say it," he willed. The words a prayer to a god that had forsaken him decades ago, if he'd ever been blessed to begin with.
"Say it, so I may give it all to you."
It was possible he said the words aloud, because she replied to them, her beautiful brown eyes black in the darkness, finding his, her fingers tightening at his shoulder, her free hand coming to rest high on his chest, as she whispered, full of surprise and somehow certainty, "Want?"
"Yes," he said, leaning close,
tightening his grip and pulling her to him, somehow finding the strength to keep his kiss from hers.
"I feel it too."
Her eyes closed, long dark lashes a sooty slash against her skin, luminous in the ethereal icy light for half a moment before they opened again, found his. "Unlock me," she whispered. The words were strange and perfect and irresistible, and Devil did as she commanded, his fingers sliding into her hair, his thumb stroking over her cheek, sipping at her lips, once, twice, gently, savoring the taste of her, soft and impossibly sweet. He lifted his head, leaving a minuscule space between them, enough for her to open her eyes. Her fingers curled into the fabric of his shirt, tugging at him to bring him back. "Devil?" He shook his head, unable to stop himself.
"When I was a boy," he whispered,
leaning in for another taste, a little lingering lick.
"I stole into the May Day Fair in Hyde Park."
Another kiss, this one longer, ending on her sigh, pretty as sin. He pressed a kiss to her cheek, another to the corner of her lips, where that dimple lay, letting his tongue linger in the space until she turned toward him. He pulled back, suddenly wanting her to hear the story.
"There was a stall filled with sticks of spun sugar, white and fluffy as clouds. I'd never seen anything like them."
She was watching him, and he leaned in to kiss her gently, unable to keep himself from licking at her full lower lip, loving the way it went slack at the touch, the way she opened to him.
"Children clamored for those treats," he whispered. "And parents, lost in the festivities, were more generous than usual."
She smiled,
And did someone buy one for you?
No one ever bought anything for me.
Her smile fell.
I watched as dozens of others received their treat, and I hated them for knowing what those white clouds tasted like.
He paused.
I nearly stole one.
Nearly? He'd been run off by fairground guards before he could.
For years, I've told myself that the idea of that treat was far better than however it might have tasted.
She nodded. Tell me the idea of it.
It couldn't possibly taste near what I imagined it to be, you see. It couldn't be as sweet, or as sinful, or as delicious.
He drew closer to her, his words barely a breath over her lips.
But you...
He let his lips slide over hers, a silken touch.
You, Felicity Faircloth, just might be all those things.
Another slide, the little whimper that escaped from her, making him want to do wicked, wonderful things.
You just might be more.
Her fingers tightened, threatening to shred the linen of his shirt.
Devil! I'm going to steal you instead, he said then,
knowing she'd hear the words as part of the story and not as she should, as the truth.
I'm going to steal you, he confessed again. I'm going to steal you and make you mine.
It's not theft if I allow it, she whispered. Silly girl. Of course it was. But it wouldn't stop him. Chapter 16. She was so sweet, heady and lush and soft like that spun sugar from all those years ago. She was sin and sex and freedom and pleasure and something more and something worse, and he was lost in the feel of her lips and the taste of her when she opened to him, like she'd been waiting her whole life for him. Felicity Faircloth was perfection, the first taste of it Devil had ever had. She tasted like a promise. She sighed and he groaned, pulling her tighter to him, his fingers tangling in her hair, as hers came to the rough stubble of his cheek, her nails scraping across it, until she was pulling his head down to her, as though she'd been waiting all her life for this kiss, and she meant for it to be worth it. God damn it, he wanted to make it worth it. He wrapped an arm around her, pulling her tight against him so quickly, so thoroughly, that she gasped. He released her lips and said,
I wanted to hold you like this earlier, when we were watching the cargo move, he said.
Christ, why was he telling her that? She came up on her toes and pressed her forehead to his. I wanted you to hold me like this, she whispered. How could he resist that? He returned to her lips, playing over them gently, softly, teasing her with his tongue until she sighed, opening to let him in, all sweet, silken heat and lush promise. And then Felicity Faircloth, plain, spinster wallflower, kissed him back, meeting his tongue, matching him like a fallen angel. Like a fucking goddess. And he reveled in it, in her pleasure, in her sighs and moans and the shiver that went through her when he opened her coat, no, his coat, and put his hands to her. She broke their kiss on a gasp. Devil!
Are you cold?
God damn it, of course she was cold. They were surrounded by ice. No, she panted the response, her hands clutching his shirt in one fist and pulling him closer. No, I'm blazing. Her grasp almost undid him. She was magnificent, a queen in the darkness. He knocked the lapels of his coat aside, resisting her pull to watch his hands on her, on that pretty white and pink frock that didn't belong anywhere near this place that was too dark and too dirty and too sinful for her. Felicity didn't belong here, but it didn't stop him from touching her.
You are blazing, he said,
his gaze tracking the movement of his hands up the sides of her bodice to the neckline, where silk gave way to impossibly soft skin. He touched her there, where breath came hard and fast, revealing her pleasure.
You don't need lessons in fire. You're an inferno.
She nodded. I feel it. He almost smiled.
Good.
Would you... She stopped, and then... Would you kiss me again? Yes, Christ, yes.
Where?
Her eyes went wide. Where?
Shall I show you where you might like it?
Her lips curled in a magnificent smile. Yes, please. Far be it from him to deny a lady. Returning his hands to her waist, he pulled her closer, putting his lips to her jaw, letting his tongue slide along the line of it.
Here, perhaps.
Oh, yes, she sighed. That's quite nice.
He said. I think we can do better than quite nice.
He ran his teeth down the long column of her neck.
How about here?
Her fingers slid up over his tightly shorn hair, her nails raking over his scalp, sending shivers of pleasure through him as he sucked at the place where her neck met her shoulder, knowing he must be careful, knowing he couldn't mark her, wanting desperately to mark her. She whimpered, and he lifted his head.
What does that mean?
She slid her gaze to his, and the look in her eyes nearly brought him to his knees there in the hold. That's very nice. The woman was teasing him, and it was delicious. He was hard as steel, and he loosened his tether, grasping her waist and lifting her to sit on the ice behind her. When she squeaked her surprise, he slid between her legs, her heavy skirts making it impossible to get too close, which was probably best. Definitely best. And also the fucking worst. This isn't... She cut her own breathless words off. He reached for her again.
It isn't the kind of thing ladies do.
She shook her head, bit her bottom lip. No, but I find I do not care. He did laugh then, a short, unwelcome bark of laughter. It is delicious. Show me another place. And his laughter dissolved into a groan. He pulled her closer with one hand, setting the other to her soft, bare ankle beneath her skirts.
You are not wearing stockings, he whispered at her ear.
It's June, she said.
And in June, ladies are able to dispense with stockings.
She dipped her head, and he adored her embarrassment. I did not expect anyone to see.
I can't see, he whispered,
letting his frustration fill the words, loving the laugh he summoned with the words. I most certainly didn't expect anyone to touch. He replied, letting his hand climb higher.
That's the problem with being flame, Felicity. Moths want to touch.
Show me, she whispered. God help him, he did, taking her lips and letting his hand climb higher, pushing her skirts up over her knee, revealing a long, soft expanse of leg. He took her thigh in hand, lifting her leg, pressing closer, and damned if she didn't come to the edge of the ice block to meet him. He pressed a line of kisses to her shoulder and down the slope of one breast to the neckline of her dress.
Here,
he whispered, playing at the place where her breast rose from the lacy white fabric. He raised a hand, tugged at the bodice, baring more skin, enough to reveal the upper edge of a nipple.
Here.
He licked at the soft skin, loving the way it puckered beneath his touch. She hissed at the sensation, and he pulled back from her.
Are you cold?
She shook her head. No, 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 no. Her fingers tightened at his head, and she rose toward him, closing the distance between them. Again, please. Anything she wants. Everything. He groaned and pulled the line of the dress lower, revealing her nipple for his lips and tongue, scraping it with his teeth as he tucked his hard length against her, his trousers suddenly too tight. She cried out when he suckled, light and then harder as she whispered his name in the darkness. Devil.
Devon,
his mind whispered back, and he pushed the thought aside, refusing to allow it purchase. No one called him by his given name, certainly no woman, and he wasn't about to let Felicity Faircloth be the first. But he would let her do other things. He would let her touch him,
let her direct his mouth to where she wanted it, let her press closer to the long, throbbing length of him, even when she didn't know what she was tempting, what she was asking. I want...
I know, he replied,
rocking against her, letting her taste the pleasure he could give her. She quickly got the hang of it, and Devil let her use him. He growled and suckled deeper, loving the cry she let loose against his hair as he worked her with tongue and lips. As she worked herself on him, she was fire, and he was a flame. All he wanted was to lie her back on this slab of ice and worship her with his hands and mouth and cock until she learned the thousand ways he could bring her pleasure. She would let him. She was lost to pleasure, rocking against him, begging him for it. Please, she sighed. Not tonight. He stilled at that, raising his lips from her breast, staying the movement of his hands on her thigh, where it played at the seam of her undergarments. Not yet. Bans haven't been posted. The whisper came from deep within, from the place that had planned revenge against his brother, from the place that had hated his brother for 20 years, from the place that had hated his father for far longer. Hate had no place with Felicity Faircloth. It would. There would be a time when she would hate him. A heavy pounding on the steel door to the room punctuated the thought, and they both turned toward it. It wasn't locked, but Whit and Nick would know better than to enter without permission. They'd also know better than to knock in the first place, unless something had gone wrong. He pulled away abruptly, her fingers releasing his head as he lowered her skirts, dropping them over her legs and stepping back, putting room between them as their heavy breaths echoed through the cavernous space. She reached for him, like a goddess. He shook his head, somehow finding the will to refuse her.
No, he whispered. No more tonight, Lady Flame.
But... he heard the frustration in the word, the same frustration that crawled through him. She wanted him. She wanted all of it. But Felicity Faircloth didn't know how to ask for it, thank God, and so she settled on. Please... Christ, he wanted to give it to her. Not tonight. Too soon. He shouldn't give it to her ever. A knock again. Urgent and unwilling to be ignored. He righted her bodice and pulled his coat tight around her when she shivered, the cold finally finding her.
Come, he said.
And she did, following him back through the ice to the steel door. Behind it, Nick. It's London second, again.
Devil cursed. It's been what, an hour?
Long enough to clear the rookery, she said. They were waiting for us. Stopped just before crossing Longacre. Headed for Mayfair. They were already through the steel door, letting it clatter behind them, unlocked as they headed down the long, dark corridor to the hatch that let them up into the warehouse. What's happened? Felicity asked at his elbow. Is it the crown? He looked to her, half grateful she knew the truth and half irritated she knew the truth.
What would the crown want with ice?
Then, without hesitating, he looked back to Nick.
The boys.
Dinukar is returned, one of the outriders. He fired on them, thinks he winged one. Niall and Hamish are shot.
God damn it, we changed the route.
It was the third hijacking of the same delivery in 2 months. Felicity's gasp drowned out his curse at the news. Shot by whom? Nick looked to her. We don't know. If they knew, Devil would have run them through already. He swore again as Nick reached the ladder and set to climbing. Niall was one of the bastard's best drivers. The Scotsman had been with them since he was a boy. Hamish was his brother, barely out of boyhood, hadn't even grown his first beard.
Alive,
he shouted up to Nick as she turned to help Felicity out of the hold. The Norwegian looked down at him. We don't know. Another curse as he passed up the lantern, Felicity leaning down to take it from him, as though she'd done this 100 times instead of 1. Devil, she said softly, and he hated the pity in her tone, as though she understood the rioting emotions in him. These were his boys, every one of them, his to keep safe. And tonight, three of them had been threatened. He turned away from her gaze, looking back toward the ice hold. Mistake. There was darkness everywhere now that he'd handed up the lantern, and its nearness, the way it crept into the corners of his consciousness, was too much. He scrambled up the ladder, desperate to escape it. Except he'd never been able to escape it. He lived in darkness. But there on the surface was Felicity, light and hope, and everything he would never have. Everything he'd once been promised. Everything he'd once imagined might be his, in a brilliant, beautiful package. The concern in her eyes was nearly his undoing. He barked an order to Nick to close the hatch to the ice hold. What had he been thinking? What had he been doing? She didn't belong here, in this place or in his life. He shook his head once and started across the warehouse, toward the door she never should have come through, where Whit stood sentry, dark eyes seeing everything, lingering at a place near Devil's thigh. Devil's hand flexed under his brother's watchful gaze, and he realized Felicity's was in his grasp. He hadn't even noticed. Devil dropped her hand, catching the cane sword Whit tossed before he was through the door and calling for John, who leapt down from the roof, rifle in hand. Waving back at Felicity without stopping, Devil ordered, "Take her home." Felicity's inhale was loud as a gunshot in the warehouse courtyard. "No." Devil didn't look at her. John nodded.
"Aye, sir."
"Wait," she chased after Devil. "What's happened? Where are you going? Let me come, I can help." She had to leave here. She was in more danger every moment she lingered. She was more danger to him every moment she lingered. What if she hadn't been here? Perhaps he would have decided to drive the rig. Then Niall wouldn't have a bullet in him. His gaze met Whit's, calm and collected and absent of judgment. But Devil felt the judgment anyway. What the hell was he doing, playing at passion in the ice hold, while men with lives and families and futures were shot at in his name? Christ, he never should have let her in. Hadn't Whit said it? Hadn't Devil known it? What a fucking mess. He repeated his order to John.
"Take her home. Shoot anyone who gets in your way."
"Aye," John replied again, reaching for her arm.
"My lady?"
She pulled away.
"No."
The word was firm, and John hesitated. "Devil, I can help. If it's the crown, no one hurts a Marquis's daughter." Devil stopped then, turning to her, unable to keep his frustration from rising.
"You think for a moment that if someone comes at you with a rifle, they'll care if you're a Marquis's daughter? You think they'll care that you're a lady who embroiders and speaks two languages and knows where to put the goddamn soup spoon and is engaged to a fucking duke?"
Her eyes went wide, and he should have stopped, but he didn't. He was angry. At himself, but at her as well, for her fresh-faced innocence and her certainty that the world wasn't bitter and cruel.
"They won't. Not for a second. In fact, they'll aim for you, looking like sunshine and smelling like jasmine, because they know men raised in the dark will do anything for light."
Her jaw dropped, and he cut her off before she could speak.
"You think you can help us?"
He gave a little humorless laugh.
"What will you do? Pick their locks?"
Her back went stick straight, and he hated the thread of guilt that came with the hurt in her eyes.
"You're no kind of help. You think this is a game. You think the darkness a shining new toy. Well, here is your most important lesson. The darkness isn't for princesses. It is time for you to return to your storybook tower. Don't come back."
He turned his back on the wallflower, leaving her in silence and taking to the horse at the center of the yard, saddled and waiting for him. Felicity Faircloth wasn't ready for silence.
"So you renege," she called after him, her voice strong and steady, a siren's call.
He wheeled the mount around so he could see her in the shadows of the lantern strewn about the yard, wind rustling her skirts, and several locks of errant hair he released from their moorings when he'd kissed her. His chest tightened at the image, at the straight line of her shoulders and the proud jut of her chin.
You have your duke, don't you?
Not the way you promised. Fucking passion, like nothing he'd ever experienced. He never should have come near that request, because right now he was willing to do anything to keep her from sharing air with his brother, let alone sharing herself with him.
You should know better than to believe the promises of a man like me. The deal is done. Go home, Felicity. You are not welcome here.
For a long moment she watched him, and every inch of him knew that he should turn from her before she spoke again. But he couldn't. And then she spoke, her words taunting and as stinging as a whip.
Tell me, devil, what shall you do to keep me away? Lock the doors.
What in? Was she provoking him? Did she have any idea who he was, what kind of man he was? He moved to dismount, to approach her and... Christ, he wanted to kiss her senseless. What the hell had he done?
Devil,
Whit warned, atop his own mount, staying Devil's movement. There were more important things than teaching Felicity Faircloth a lesson. He stared down at her from his great black horse, delivering her the cold, icy look that had terrified larger, stronger men. Not stronger.
Take her home,
he said, without looking at John. She did not look away from him as his man approached her. Indeed, one mahogany brow rose in beautiful defiance. Devil spun his horse around to face Whit, who was watching him stone-faced.
What?
Devil snarled.
Smelling like jasmine,
Whit said, his tone dry as sand. Devil's curse was lost in the wind, as the bastards spurred their horses into motion, heading for Fleet Street to rescue their fallen men. Chapter 17. He could be dead. Felicity stabbed her needle into her embroidery hoop 2 mornings later, with a violence that matched the thought, barely missing drawing her own blood. Not that the threat served to slow her next stitch. Or the next. I don't care if he's dead, she added, speaking to the Bumble House sunroom at large, despite it being empty of living creatures. He was unkind, and it won't matter a bit if he's dead. Except before Devil had been unkind, he hadn't been unkind at all. Before Devil had been unkind, he'd been altogether the opposite of it. He'd kissed her and touched her and made her sigh in ways she did not know a person was able to sigh. He'd made her feel things she'd never felt before. Not that any of that matters, as he ultimately became very unkind and is likely dead, she repeated, stabbing her needle into her embroidery hoop again with wicked force. He wasn't dead. The words whispered through her mind as she continued her project, resisting the urge to find a piece of paper and send him a note, telling him in great detail what he could do with himself if he were dead. Resisting the more pressing urge to toss her whole embroidery hoop into the fire and make her way back to Covent Garden in broad daylight and see his dead body for herself. It occurred to Felicity that a woman should be able to sense the death of a man if she nearly ruined herself with him in an ice hold beneath a warehouse mere hours earlier. And yet she sensed no such thing. The universe was frustrating indeed. She set her hoop on her lap and heaved a sigh.
He'd better not be dead. Goodness, Felicity, of course he's not dead, her mother sang from the doorway, her trio of dachshunds barking excitedly to punctuate the declaration, startling Felicity from her talkative reverie. Felicity turned.
I beg your pardon. The Marchioness waved a hand in the air and laughed, in that way that mothers laughed when they didn't want their daughters embarrassing them.
He is decidedly not dead. He's clearly had business to attend to since you last saw him.
Felicity blinked.
I'm sorry, Mother. Who is it who is not dead?
The Duke, of course, her mother said, and one of the dachshunds barked, then promptly tipped over Felicity's embroidery basket and began to gnaw upon the handle, prompting the Marchioness to add, in dulcet tones,
No, Rosie, that's not good for you.
The dog growled and continued to chew. I wasn't suggesting the Duke was dead, Felicity said. But I might say, Mother, that it's not an impossibility. After all, we haven't seen the Duke in several days, and so we don't know he is alive. We do, assuming he hasn't perished in your father's study in the last 5 minutes, the Marchioness replied, before reaching down to pluck the dog from the basket, which did not work as planned, as the dog simply tightened her grip and brought the whole thing with her into her mistress's arms. Father is here. Felicity's brows rose. If the Marquis of Bumble was at home, something serious was happening indeed. Of course he is, Felicity's mother said. Where else would he be with your marriage and the balance? She tugged on the basket and the dog growled. Rosencrantz, drop it, darling. Felicity rolled her eyes and stood, needlepoint in hand. Is that what they are discussing? My marriage? Her mother smiled. Your Duke has arrived to save us from a life of poverty. Felicity stilled at the words, honest and somehow flippant. An echo of Devil's words 2 nights earlier.
Your family will never be poor enough to fear poverty.
She had been defensive when he'd said it, as though he didn't take her seriously. But here, as the words echoed beneath her family's roof, as they wore their fashionable frocks surrounded by her mother's dogs, who ate better than the children in the rookery where Devil made his life, and were safer than the boys who worked for him, she understood them. What had his life been like? She might have been manipulated in recent months, pushed to marry without being told why, leveled with disappointment without reason, but she'd never doubted her family's love for her. She'd never feared for her safety or her life. But Devil had. She knew that as clearly as she knew his kiss, as she knew the feel of his touch, and the thought consumed her. Who had saved Devil from his past? Or had he been forced to save himself? Her mother interrupted the thoughts. Well done. Landing the Hermit Duke is a cracking good job. I knew you could do it. Felicity's attention snapped to the Marchioness. Well, if one is thrown into the path of enough dukes, one is bound to win one of them, I suppose. Her mother's brows rose. Surely you aren't unhappy about the match. This one is infinitely better than the last. We don't know that, Felicity replied. Don't be so silly, the Marchioness huffed. The last one was already married. At least the last one showed emotion. He offered to marry you, Felicity. Her mother's tone was getting more and more curt. That's emotion enough. As a matter of fact, he didn't offer, she replied. He said I was convenient, that I made the search for a wife easier. Well, I don't see the lie in that. Indeed, it might be the first time you've ever been accommodating, the Marchioness retorted. And lest you forget, it's not as though you're a trial. You are daughter to a marquis, sister to an earl. And I've excellent teeth. Precisely, the Marchioness replied. But she was more than that. Didn't her mother see? She wasn't simply the wallflower at the ball, desperate to do whatever necessary to win herself a husband and save her family's finances. She looked like sunshine and smelled like jasmine. The thought sent a wave of heat through her. When he'd said it 2 nights ago, it had taken all she had not to make him explain himself. It hadn't seemed like a compliment, even as it had sounded like the most beautiful compliment she'd ever heard. Men raised in the dark will do anything for light. She wondered if he realized how much she wanted to explore the darkness. Except she couldn't. Her desires were second to the needs of her family. She was their only hope, and it did not matter that she'd never be free of the yoke they wished for her. It did not matter that she'd just had a glimpse of the dark, and she was losing her taste for the light. It did not matter that she had no interest in summoning the Duke to her flame, that she wished another moth, a different set of singed wings, a moth that seemed to have no interest in flying near her. And so she was left here, not flame, merely Felicity, her family's last chance. She met her mother's gaze. The Duke is here for me.
Well, he's here to meet your father, and your brother, to sort the ins and outs of your marriage.
He is here to fill our coffers once more. Her mother inclined her head, tacit acknowledgement.
He's rich as the devil, I'm told.
Felicity refrained from telling her mother that she knew the devil, and he was richer than anyone she'd ever known. It didn't matter, of course, because devil's money would never be the saving grace of the Marquisate of Bumble. It would never rescue her brother from certain ruin. And what of her? Could he rescue her? No, devil's money wasn't for saving Felicity, and neither was the man.
Don't come back.
His words echoed through her, cold and clear. So she was left here with the Duke. The Duke devil had promised her. The Duke he'd somehow delivered. Somehow, without telling her how. Without telling her why. Surely there was a reason, wasn't there? But it wasn't important enough for her to know, just as it hadn't been important enough for her family to tell her their plans. To tell her their fears. To tell her how she was intended to save them. Just as it wasn't important to the Duke of Marwick to tell her why he was so willing to marry her in the first place. Another locked door. This time, she would unlock it. Felicity sighed again. I suppose I should go greet him. She was out of the sitting room, her mother sputtering behind her and in front of her father's closed study door in moments. She rapped firmly, already turning the door handle when her father barked out his,
Come!
Her brother came to his feet as she stepped inside. Her father remained behind his desk, but it took Felicity a moment to find the Duke of Marwick standing at the long French doors on the far end of the room.
Felicity, Arthur began.
No, no, accident, her mother sang from the hallway, a trio of dachshunds scrambling behind. Accident!
This as she pushed her way into the room with a wave of a hand.
Felicity did not realize men were meeting, Your Grace.
The Duke turned at that, finding Felicity's eyes.
What did you think was happening?
He wasn't ordinary, this man. He didn't seem dangerous, but rather uncommon. I thought you were here discussing our marriage and its relationship to my brother and father's financial situation. He nodded once.
That is indeed what we are discussing.
Was he inviting her in? Did it matter?
Then I'm certain you won't mind if I join you.
Her mother was nearly apoplectic.
You can't do that. This conversation isn't for women.
Girl, her father warned from behind his desk.
Without looking away from the Duke, Felicity said,
I rather think it should be for women, as its entire purpose is to put a price on one, is it not?
Watch it, Felicity, her father cautioned,
and it occurred to Felicity that, in the past, she might have left at that cold, unmoved caution, for propriety's sake, to retain the label of good and obedient daughter to a man who'd never paid much attention to her, not even when she was his only hope for redemption. But she found she wasn't much for propriety at the moment, nor was she in the market to let her family make decisions about her future any longer, not when she was their sole bargaining chip. She was saved from having to say any of that, however, by the Duke.
Of course you should stay.
And with that, the decision was made. He turned back to the window, and Felicity noticed that his hair gleamed gold in the room, as though the man travelled with his own light source. She supposed another woman might find him beautifully handsome. She had in the past, hadn't she? Hadn't there been a time when she'd called him the handsomest man she'd ever seen? It had been a lie, of course, told to another, handsomer man. A man who shouldn't be so handsome, but was in fact so handsome it made her want to spit with how irritating he was.
Where did you leave off?
We were discussing the terms of our marriage.
She nodded.
Without me. Felicity, her mother said before turning to the Duke. Your Grace, forgive her. We raised her to be less involved.
That's only because you preferred not to tell me anything about your plans for my future, Felicity said.
We didn't want to worry you, Arthur replied.
She looked to her brother.
Shall I tell you what worries me?
He didn't reply, but she saw the guilt flash over his face. Good. The fact that even after everything that has happened, you still cannot see beyond your own problems.
Damn it, girl! This is how it's done, her father interjected. Women like to think marriage is about love. It's not. It's a business. We are discussing business.
She looked to her father, then back to Arthur. Then you will surely understand that it worries me that you thought I was a commodity to be traded without my consent.
One might argue that you consented when you told half of London that we were to be married, the Duke pointed out, not incorrectly.
She started across the room toward him. Nevertheless, Your Grace will surely understand that I have a vested interest in the terms to which you've agreed. Her fiancé was calmer than ever, his attention fixed to a hedgerow in the distance.
I certainly do understand, as they are more the terms to which you've agreed.
Felicity hesitated. Was it possible this man was an ally? It was difficult to imagine what he might be with how impenetrable he was. Of course, I forgot that my father and brother speak with my voice.
Felicity, Arthur began.
The Duke cut him off.
I'm not certain anyone in the world speaks with your voice.
Is that an insult, she asked.
No, as a matter of fact.
He was a strange man. And so, to what have I agreed?
The banns will be posted immediately, and we will marry in 3 weeks' time. After which, you have agreed to live here in London, in the house of your choosing.
Have you more than one London home?
I do not, but I am very rich, and you are welcome to purchase another home, should you find one you prefer.
She nodded. And you aren't interested in where we live?
As we will not live there, I am not.
The words surprised her. She looked to her father, jaw set in irritation, then to her mother, whose jaw dropped just slightly, then to Arthur, who appeared to be transfixed by the carpet. She returned her attention to the Duke. You mean as you will not live there? He inclined his head and returned his attention to the gardens beyond the window. She watched him for a moment. You've no interest in marrying me.
Not particularly, he replied absently.
So much for moths and flames. But you will nonetheless. He was silent. Her gaze narrowed. And what then? One side of his mouth kicked up in a little wry smile.
You'll be very rich, Lady Felicity. Surely you'll find something to do with yourself.
Her mouth opened. Her mother gasped. Her father coughed. Arthur was silent. The words weren't cruel. The Duke wasn't angry or bitter or punishing. He was simply forthright. And there was something in that truth that spoke to Felicity. Just long enough for her to wonder what precisely he was planning. This isn't going the way I thought it would.
And how did you think it would?
I thought she would want... She stopped.
Did you think we would love each other?
No, love had never been a part of it. At least, not with him. With another man, perhaps, when she was younger. Another faceless husband. Tall and dark, and with golden eyes and lips that had been forged in sin. She pushed the thought aside. No, he nodded.
I didn't think so.
His gaze lowered to the embroidery hoop she continued to clutch in her hand. He tilted his head.
Is that a fox?
She lifted the project, looking down at it, surprised. She'd forgotten what she'd been doing before he'd arrived here, and everything had gone to pot.
It is. With a hen?
It was, indeed. The orange and white animal held a silky brown chicken in its mouth.
Yes. Good Lord.
She looked up to him. I'm quite good at needlepoint.
So I see.
He stepped forward, not lifting his gaze.
The blood is rather.
She considered the hoop, then offered. Gruesome. He nodded.
Gruesome.
I was angry when I started it. Devil had exiled her from his world and rushed off armed to Lord knew where. He might be dead. He wasn't dead. Did it matter? He'd sent her home and told her never to return. He might as well be dead for all he was rid of her. She didn't like the way her chest constricted at the thought. She wasn't ready to be rid of him. Or the world in which he lived, or the hints of magic he'd shown her. But he was ready to be rid of her, and here she was, negotiating the terms of a loveless marriage with this strange duke who proposed nothing like magic. Here she was, alone once more.
"Is this how you show your emotions?" Marwick pressed on, curious. "Needlepoint."
"I also talk to myself."
"Christ, girl, he'll think you mad."
She didn't look to her father. "That's fine, as I think him rather mad myself."
"Felicity!"
Her mother threatened the vapors, no doubt. One of the dogs barked and attacked the clawed foot of her father's desk.
"Damn it, Catherine!" her father shouted at her mother.
"Gilly, stop it! No biting, Guildenstern! Enough!"
The dog continued. Arthur stared up at the ceiling and sighed. The Duke did not seem to mind the chaos. His eyes went to the windows again.
"Then we are settled."
She supposed they should be. She looked to her brother, meeting the brown eyes as familiar as her own, saw the pleading in them, the hope, and she couldn't stop the irritation that flared at it. "And so we have it. I marry and you live happily ever after." Her brother had the grace to look guilty.
"You deserve it," she said, unable to keep the sadness from her voice, from her mind.
"You and Prue and the children, you deserve everything you've ever wished. You deserve happiness, and I shall be glad to give it to you. But I'm not sure I'll ever stop begrudging you for it."
Arthur nodded. "I know."
She turned to find the Duke watching her for the first time, something more than boredom in his face. Something like longing, which was impossible, of course. This mad duke did not seem a type that longed, and certainly not for her. For the life of her, she'd never understand why she asked him. "Would you like to see the gardens?"
"No,"
her father interjected, his frustration evident.
"We're not done."
"I would, as a matter of fact," the Duke said, before turning to the Marquis.
"We can discuss the rope I shall toss you both to keep you from drowning when I return."
With that, he set his hand to the door handle and opened it to the balcony beyond. Standing aside, he allowed her to exit before he followed her out, closing the door firmly behind them. Felicity hadn't gone 3 feet when he said,
"I don't care for your family."
"Neither do I at the moment," she replied. Then, supposing she should offer a defense, she said, "They are desperate." He passed her, heading for the stone steps leading down into the gardens, clearly expecting her to follow.
"They don't know what desperation is."
The words were so familiar, an echo of Devil's rant at the warehouse, but in the wake of the place and man who had said them first, they seemed ridiculous, and Felicity found herself irritated by them. "What does a duke, rich as a king, know of desperation?" He turned to her then, something in his eyes unsettling enough to stop her in her tracks.
"I know that your father is a marquis and your brother is an earl, and even if they never married you off, they'd fail to understand the level of want that men can achieve. And I know that if they have even an inkling of love for you, they will regret sacrificing you for their own happiness."
She inhaled sharply at the words, clear and filled with honesty. She opened her mouth, closed it, then tried again. "They are my family. I wish to protect them."
"They should be protecting you," he replied.
"From you?" He seemed to struggle with the reply, finally settling on.
"You've nothing to fear from me."
She nodded. "Especially since you've no intention of our interacting once we're married. What would I fear? Becoming lost in your piles of money?" He did not smile.
"Did you expect us to interact?"
The question shouldn't have summoned a vision of 2 nights earlier, of the interaction Devil had offered her, of the kiss that had stolen her breath and her thoughts for longer than it should have. If that was a commonplace interaction between married couples, she had most certainly not expected it. Pressing